Mini-episode 736 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the History of the Royal Rumble Anthology in the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross breaking down this time around 2010. We're getting into it. For anybody that wants to check out our original one here, that's where we have all of our thoughts on how this came to be, the setup for it, whatever, the first 10 or 15 minutes of mini episode that covered 1988. So that's one.
And by it, we mean the Royal Rumble.
Yes, it. That one is the original one in all of this. And again, we've continued going through the subsequent eras. We are now into the era of 2008 to 2013, Kyle. Landing more or less squarely in the middle of it here with 2010.
Yes. We are calling it What the Split / Decline of the Rumble.
Yep.
Interesting that there was no sign of decline in 2008. That number was up.
Right.
But in 2009, numbers definitely went down. But overall, the Rumble concept as the kickoff on the road to WrestleMania was still pretty strong entering 2010. The reason we did the slash is because that really starts in 2011, where I think we begin a series of years where the Rumble doesn't get you as excited about the subsequent WrestleManias as maybe it had in the past.
That's right.
But that's a different podcast for a different day. We're still in kind of the What the Split era here, and that this is, to me, very much a lost, I don't want to say a lost, you always use that term, the lost generation.
Yeah.
Of the talent that was brought in during this period. A lot of it didn't really materialize and is gone. I felt that, especially watching the Rumble match itself on this show, you got a lot of those guys that were brought in, thought that the company was behind them, and they all got kind of dumped pretty quickly.
Right.
And Drew McIntyre, anyone?
Well, yeah, and it's a thing where when you look at the 2000s, it really is a story of the extremes, because you have on the one hand Cena, Orton, Batista, who would strangely enough be on his way out even though he's in the middle of a hot run here. You have those guys, and we look at the other guys, and I know that when you look at the present product, and
it was a lot of have and have nots in this Rumble.
And that when you fast forward to when we're recording this, as of right now, early 2016, I know that you like to bemoan the whole Kane, Show, Henry kind of a thing. Here's the thing, man. We still have those guys on our TV because, again, the lost generation. There weren't guys. There should be guys in there. There should be a Luther Reigns or one of these guys. I'm just picking.
I don't know
somebody
about Luther Reigns.
Okay, Nathan Jones. Is that a better example?
No, it's worse.
Okay. Sheldon Benjamin. We can agree on that one. There should be guys like that that are still part of the product, still at the forefront today. And in recent years, they've done a very good job of recruiting from the indies, of going after the kind of guys that they should have been, but they weren't going to the indies in the 2000s. They were trying to create their own muscle heads, and we're facing the reckoning here in early 2010. We are starting to reap what we've sown. What's interesting is, we're going to get to this a little bit later, Sheamus in a WWE title match, it's a situation where they were overcompensating by giving rocket pushes to guys like immediately.
Well, developmental now.
Yes.
Now being 2016, like you pointed out.
Yes.
A lot better than it was back
night
then.
Night and day.
I mean, they know what they're doing. And it's funny that the three letters NXT actually started in 2010.
In a different form, yes. But you're right about that. Not long after this show, actually.
But, you know, we say What the Split. It's because we're still in this brand split era.
Theoretically.
Yeah, but it's so much softer than it was. We keep saying that it's getting softer and softer. And the idea of having two separate brands it's just becoming more. What's the word I'm looking for? It's just not just working.
Yeah,
you know, it's getting harder and harder to get people.
It's hard to put it into exact words. Yeah,
in two separate brands here. The star power is obviously way down from when this thing was first conceived back in 2003, and which is interesting because star power then was way down for the previous couple of years, and I actually mean 2002. But anyway, and the SmackDown TV situation was real dicey.
Yeah,
because wasn't it in 2010 that they then went to Sci-Fi?
I think so. Yeah. So you know, they went off of network.
It went CW to the ill-fated My Network TV, which
that
didn't
is,
last. Like, that was like 2 years. And
that's
then Sci-Fi.
De facto syndication. That's not even a network.
They needed to take a look at this. And again, it's all water under the bridge. Doesn't matter.
Right.
But they needed to be like, oh God, this one brand, it keeps jumping around on networks. We're struggling and have really kind of given up the idea that it's a separate but equal brand anyway.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. They pumped it on that idea years before this.
They handled separate but equal about as well as the southern U.S. states.
That was a bit of a stretch. But as we'll see, and we'll talk about at the end of this show, as we roll into Mania, getting two title matches that people really cared about was getting tougher and tougher. We talked about that WrestleMania 25 would have been the perfect time to unify back the titles.
Yep.
They obviously didn't. And it's crazy to me to think that, what, for three more years? Almost four? I mean, it was at the end of 2013, right, when they finally did unify. It's crazy to me that they kept having the two world titles for as long as they did.
We got a lot more of this crap to come. But here's the thing, though. And I'm not saying that you were on the verge of letting them off the hook, but I want to just draw a line right now and say I refuse to, because it's not a thing of where you couldn't book that kind of intrigue. They just weren't capable of it at the time. You could book, if you had the parallel universes going, they had enough talent at the top. You look at the wrestlers, and it was Cena, Batista at WrestleMania, and it was Jericho.
Oh, they had, yeah.
You could have. And look at the guys that weren't even in the title picture. HBK, Undertaker, Triple H. You had the depth to create two awesome main event storylines for those title matches. They just dropped the ball.
I'm saying, hold that thought, because I'm going to get into it. Because I actually think the creative going into Mania was pretty good this year, especially compared to the last.
Oh, better than last.
I'm not
going
to talk about that.
But the last was so sad.
My issue was that because of SmackDown's TV situation.
Yeah.
You have to look at this and say, okay, we don't know. You know, it's different now where they've got them both on USA and they're on solid ground. But you don't know what's going to happen with this SmackDown, right? If you don't know what damn station your one brand's going to be on, it's kind of hard to treat it like a separate but equal brand when you know Raw is going to be on at 8 o'clock every Monday on USA.
Okay, but
and
here's
the thing,
though.
And you've got this other show bouncing around, which is already viewed as an inferior brand.
It all comes back to the fundamentals, though, of booking the guys that you have as strongly as you can book them. I understand what you're saying, but that's more along the lines of if you're plucking all the major players and putting them on Raw and overtly making SmackDown a B-show of where we barely even have anything we could call a world title. Listen, out of the SmackDown universe in early 2010, we still had Undertaker, Rey, we had Jericho, we had Edge. You had the guys to be able to maintain this. They had stripped the entire thing bare and put all these guys on Raw. So I'm not as willing, it seems like, maybe to give them that slack as you are, because you can still book strongly with what you have, so long as you have that kind of star power there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about 2010.
Yeah.
As it compares to the previous year.
Okay.
That's 2009.
Yeah.
For keeping score at home. So, going back to the last Rumble that we talked about, the last mini episode, you know, late 08 and into the 09 Rumble, I kind of mentioned how the TV had been pretty good in late 2008. But then once the 2009 Rumble hits, it cools off. The Road to Mania wasn't very good. But WrestleMania 25, business-wise, surprised a lot of people in the industry. It did better than at least like Meltzer thought it was going to do. If you read, if you go back and read the observers from the time period, he was like, "Oh, the creative sucks here," and he was right to say that. But it still did, relatively speaking, a pretty good number.
Well, and that WrestleMania was still several months away for in terms of the creative getting a little better. If you're picking up what I'm putting down,
yes. But in 2010,
yeah,
for this show, you look at the end of 09, the TV was kind of awful. The guest host era of Raw.
Yeah.
The Slammies at the end of that year.
And I'm a Jeremy Piven guy, but not in that role.
No, I mean, Dennis Miller, he sucked in the
Bob
Slammies.
Bob Barker, I will
Bob
mark
Barker
out
was the
one.
One guy, but still. And by the way, guest host, Raw.
Yeah.
Another way that they made that show look like the better brand, by having guest hosts, celebrities.
Absolutely.
Although it never was any good on a week-to-week basis.
Well, and this was the
era,
too.
It just made the show look like a bigger deal.
They were doing all kinds of weird kind of crap to try to get some mainstream run. One of the other things was that when they got shut out because of the Denver Nuggets basketball schedule,
yeah,
the playoffs.
Stan Kroenke thing,
and they ended up doing the Nuggets versus Lakers match on Raw, where all the faces were Lakers and all the heels were Nuggets, and that's the infamous match, I think. Wasn't that the last one of Kennedy in WWE because Orton blamed him for injuring him, I guess, in that match?
I believe you're correct.
Cried to management and got him fired.
I believe you're correct. I know that's what led to Kennedy's dismissal.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't remember if that was the specific match.
But stunts like that, that's basically where they were going. And again, Vince is a guy, always has been, always will be.
It was something that like nobody cared about. And by nobody, I mean wrestling fans.
But Vince is like that kitten with the ball of yarn. And the ball of yarn is mainstream attention, whatever. And he's that kitten.
And it did get him. So, I mean, I remember they talked about it on ESPN. And Vince was...
He was interviewed by Coach in his new role as an ESPN anchor. Yeah.
And Vince was completely right. Like, they got the short end of the stick. It wasn't right, but...
They did. I do remember Colorado transplant Jason Jones feeling compelled to take the side of the Nuggets in this. Well, you know, the Nuggets should come first. That didn't surprise me. Shout out to our senior editor, Jason Jones.
We all know that's the case.
Yeah.
But Vince had a point, legitimately. Right. It's one thing if they would have actually got together with the Nuggets.
Yeah.
And, like, done something.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you're going to have players from the Nuggets wrestle in a match. I mean, that seems a little far-fetched.
Right.
But you could have done something, but Vince, he was just so, like, he was such a dick about it that nobody cared. Like, Vince bitching about the Denver Nuggets, who had just didn't even bat an eyelash the whole situation, wasn't going to make anybody any money or care. But anyway, I want to talk about going into this show. Let's bring our focus back to the 2010 Rumble. So, I thought compared to the previous year, the TV around this time, going into the Rumble and then after, was a lot better than the previous year. I thought the road to WrestleMania 26 a lot stronger than the road to WrestleMania 25. Did you get that impression?
I have a general sense of what was going on in SmackDown at the time. I'm struggling to remember on Raw what were... Oh, okay, all right. So it was Cena coming off of the tables match loss to Sheamus. And
well, that's
okay.
That's
so
hold on.
Sheamus legacy. I'm trying to think.
No, I'll tell you right here.
Okay.
So one of the big complaints we had about the previous Road to WrestleMania is they waited so long to tease anything for me.
Right.
Here, you already knew two matches by the time the Royal Rumble pay per view went off.
Yeah.
You already knew two of the matches you were going to get at Mania.
Right.
HBK Taker 2.
Right.
Because at the Slammies, they did something where HBK accepted a huge butt kisser, by the way.
Right.
accepted the award for Match of the Year at The Undertaker, and he issued a challenge. And he became obsessed with it. And they knew what they were doing. And maybe some fans were like, oh, I don't know if we're going to get this or not. But I think a lot of fans were like, okay, this has been floated out. We're going to get the big rematch.
Right.
And then also a match that had you just watched the show we're about to talk about in isolation, you wouldn't even have thought of because it wasn't even mentioned. Bret Hart versus Vince.
He was mentioned at one point for being on Raw the next night, which
was
interesting.
Oh, he was. I missed
that
but that's, in my notes. Okay.
But this had happened previously. By the way, footnote to history, about 60 days before that Raw, Bret Hart was on the FDH lounge and was asked about possibly going back, and he totally kayfabed it. I'll never go back. I'll never. And I've already said I'm not saying it because I'm mad. I admire it. He knows how to be a worker. You got to do what you got to do. I'm just saying it's kind of funny to look at. I thought that segment would have worked better if it was Shawn Michaels in the ring first. And I'd like to call out Bret Hart, whatever. And you bring out the midget again. Wouldn't that have been great? Midget Hitman.
I was going to maybe talk a little bit more how the creative for Brett Vince, which should have been the easiest thing to book in the world.
Yeah.
And they made it so complicated and then it wound up doing way worse than it should have.
Right.
I was going to talk about that at the end of the show, but I'll say this. When Shawn came out and it was him and Brett in the ring,
that was a moment.
Had so much freaking heat.
Yep.
That had they done something with it,
mm-hmm.
it would have been great. But the problem was, A, Shawn was already earmarked to work with Taker. And B, Brett couldn't really work with Shawn. I mean, Brett couldn't take bumps.
Well,
and Shawn's not going to do a match with a guy who can't take bumps.
Well, C,
I mean, I guess he did with Hogan, but I mean, yeah. We saw what that was.
But equally important was Brett coming back was to try to put a lot of the ugliness behind him. You're not going to enter into a work shoot situation with a guy that you guys tried to murder each other a couple times in the late 90s. That's not going to do anything for the emotional health of the people.
Murder's
involved.
A bit strong, but they, you know, there were some backstage incidents.
There was. So it didn't make sense on that level, Kyle. They were in a different place.
When Bret Hart did that interview with you,
yeah.
Was that the one where he with the Stanley Cup preview that I was a part of?
I know what you're thinking of, and it wasn't.
Oh,
but it was
that was a different one.
Well,
where it seemed Brett was giving some very vanilla answers to your questions about the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, and here's the thing, and this is where, again, you know, issues of, you know, something getting lost in translation, because, again, I'm not the one generally who handles these bookings. So Steve Cervillo booked this thing here, and I was led to believe Brett wanted to talk about hockey. It turns out, in retrospect, Brett would have been happy just to talk wrestling the whole time. But I thought I was doing what he wanted, and Brett thought he was doing what I wanted. So we never should have talked hockey in the first place, to be honest with you, because we thought we were humoring each other. You know what I mean? It was just...
So that explains that Western Conference playoff preview.
Yeah, that was all Steve's idea, apparently. Okay. We never should have done that in the first place. But anyways, just being honest. But...
Okay, so despite the fact that business... Spoiler alert for Mania 26.
Yeah.
Won't be as good as it was for Mania 25.
Right.
The Rumble this year was up. Elimination Chamber wound up being up. And let's get into the 2010 Rumble, shall we?
Yeah. Because okay. there were some interesting storylines. Yeah. Let's get into this.
First match, ECW title match.
Last one ever on pay-per-view. Historical footnote.
Christian over Ezekiel Jackson clean with the unprettier. You, when watching this match, had texted me a note about Christian's title reign.
Yes, and there's a lot of smart opinion online. If you're looking around at the usual places that I spend a lot of time working at, DVDVR, PWO, of that as being one of the great TV wrestling stretches that anybody's had going back over a period of time. Christian with his regular ECW title defenses on TV, and I thought they were really pretty good. And again, I've been a much bigger booster of Christian than the company, quite frankly, and a lot of other people.
It's not hard.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, this is maybe his peak time creatively, certainly not commercially, but I've likened being ECW champion in that area previously to like being Florida heavyweight champion in the 80s, that it was not on a par with the world title, but it was a place where a lot of people were developing, and it was sort of like a small territory. He was great in this role. He got a surprisingly good match out of Ezekiel Jackson, who... Again, I didn't have much of a memory of one way or another, but as I'm watching this, I mean, I was very disappointed. You a lot of times pigeonhole big muscle guys as being punch and kick guys, and I remember going into this thinking, I hope that's not what Ezekiel was, because I don't remember. That's exactly what he was, punch and kick and slam, and, you know.
He was very green.
Super green.
Which is?
Super green, and it didn't belong in this role.
Well, okay, let me go back to Christian.
Yeah.
To me, it's no surprise how well he worked in this role. It's kind of like Matt Hardy the previous year, right?
Yeah.
Here's a guy, he's really good, but the company doesn't see him as a star. So let's put him on the third brand, let him just kind of do his thing. And then Ezekiel was the other kind of sports entertainer
right.
that they put on this show. A green guy that they wanted to protect.
Right.
You know, they didn't have big plans for him yet, but they wanted, you know, give him some wins over some guys who nobody gave a damn about.
And, right.
You know, we saw with Sheamus, for instance, started here and
yeah.
went on to bigger things. So the dynamic here that we got was kind of what you got from ECW in those days. It was one solid worker
mm-hmm.
who they didn't view as a star, carrying a guy who they viewed as a star but weren't ready to push yet.
That's right. That was a commonality through all of this.
What would you give this match star rating-wise?
Just off the top of my head, thinking back on it, I didn't give it a star rating at the time, but I mean, probably a good, you know, 3.25 at least.
Ooh, well, it's yeah, I would say it was 3 stars.
Somewhere in there. Two things about commentary. One,
did the commentary suck on this show.
First reference I ever remember hearing, first time it was ever used on a Royal Rumble, WWE Universe. First time that trope was dragged out.
Was it?
Yes. First of the Rumble shows, 2010. I heard it. I made a note of it here. Secondly,
we should point out that this announcing team, it was just one. It wasn't like they weren't jumping around with the three brand shows. They
right.
had Cole, Lawler, and Stryker do the full 3-hour show, and
that's
it was
right.
a clusterfuck.
Well, and here's the thing, too, with Stryker. He was going to his gimmick of what happened in this city previously. Previously in this city, Atlanta, Mr. McMahon won the ECW championship. I'm like, yeah, thanks for reminding us of that, Matt.
Yeah,
a stellar moment in all our lives.
And you know what's funny is, like, every time he gave out one of those facts, the other two, Cole Lawler, like, just wanted to bury him for doing it.
Yeah. And I'm, at this stage of the game, I'm more of a Stryker guy than either a King or a Cole guy, but I didn't mind them burying him for that.
It wasn't necessarily wrong what he was doing, but it wasn't working and he should have realized it.
Well, and it didn't fit into the story either. Don't bring up Mr. McMahon.
Yeah,
for that.
It just seemed like he was trying to sound smart at the
right.
expense of the storyline, and that's not what he should be doing. It wasn't his role.
Yeah, no, Vince wasn't telling him that in the headset, probably, although he may have been. Who
Vince
knows?
Vince probably forgotten that he was even ECW champion by 2000.
I was? Damn it!
So you mentioned this kind of being the 14-minute, 59-second mark of ECW.
Yeah.
The brand, I believe, ceased to exist the following month is when the TV was...
Between then and Elimination Chamber, Christian,
changed.
Of course, loses the title in the last ECW match ever. And then
To Jackson,
and then beats him clean on the pre-show the next month with no title, of course, at stake. Just because. You know, it's welcome
it
to WWE
odd to
booking.
A title change like that on the last show for a title that's going nowhere.
Well, it makes sense in the thing of...
It would have made sense if you were going to make Jackson strong.
That's what I'm saying. If it's a launching pad for Jackson, but A, they didn't, and B, it's clear that all that was one final middle finger to everybody that ever believed in ECW. So that's,
I don't think that was a middle finger.
I think it was kind of like, hey, smart marks, here's where we're wiping our ass with your title on the way out.
You're being a little self-important.
Okay, well.
So.
That wouldn't be the first time.
Why? Now, I know you have your reasons here for ECW being canceled. And of course, it was replaced by NXT, not the NXT that we know and love now.
Right.
A different format.
It's weird that we're going to have to explain that until the end of time. People are going to look back on all the great things that happened in NXT, but it's going to be, those first 2 years were nothing to write home about.
Yeah, it was a totally different show. But anyway, to me, and I think you've got to agree, it was no surprise that the ECW brand was ceasing.
Should have been killed earlier. Absolutely.
It was not doing good ratings on Sci-Fi.
It was being bastardized.
It was not doing good house show business.
Right.
And there are many reasons for this that we don't need to go into at this time. It just... The gap between it and SmackDown was probably more severe than the gap between SmackDown and Raw.
It was. And here's the thing, too. Let's talk about this just to mention it. We don't need to dwell on this. But you were talking before about the brand split and everything. Is that ECW had been, for the last year and a half minimum, sort of an adjunct to SmackDown. It was the talent exchange. They came with some weird acronym. But it was a thing that allowed them to shuttle guys back and forth as needed. Sometimes you would have the SmackDown Tag Team Champions show up on the show, defend the titles. That worked in the sense that ECW tag team titles would have been excessive. You don't need a third set in the company, but you did need to have tag titles for the guys to shoot for in the kayfabe sense. So it made sense in that way, but yeah, it was time for it to go. Nobody missed it because of what they had done with it towards the end. But again, Christian going out in a blaze of glory here. I mean, he had a great final match with Ezekiel Jackson.
2009 to 2011 is peak Christian. We've talked about peak Edge in the past, but 2009 to 2011, peak Christian. I'll tell you what is not peak ring announcing. Savannah announcing Ezekiel Jackson is 209 pounds.
Yeah, I made a note of that. Savannah, the ring announcer, whatever happened to her? Just in terms of like...
Oh, you just made a note of Savannah, yes.
Yeah, blink
and
you miss her.
She announced Ezekiel is 209 instead of 309, I assume that was.
Okay, yeah. He ain't no cruiserweight.
Yeah, not strong.
Yeah. I never seen a cruiserweight with a needle in his ass like that. Allegedly.
Whatever, but that can be forgivable, I guess, right?
Yeah.
A slip-up like that. You know what is not forgivable? Richard U. Morris.
I know what you're going to go to, and I agree preemptively with what you're going to say.
This backstage segment that we got after this. So we had Tiffany, I don't even remember this, who I presume was the ECW commissioner. I've blocked this out of my mind. Getting complimented by Teddy Long, still around.
Yeah.
Tiffany saying, oh, you know, I learned for the best, Teddy.
Yeah. I don't think we want to explore that too much further. Yeah.
We then get Crime Time.
Where are the white women at?
Yeah. Oh, no. Come on. Crime Time.
Yeah.
They join the party of Teddy Long and Tiffany.
Yeah.
What a party that is. And for the second year in a row, for no reason, at least no reason that I can remember, only one member of Crime Time will be allowed in the Rumble. Sounds racist to me.
Vince is using reverse quotas.
Yes. But they have a plan, Rick Morris.
Yes.
To get them both in.
Richard I. Morris.
Yes, Richard J. Morris. They are going to take the Great Khali's spot.
Yeah.
And both guys will be at both JTG and Shad will get in. How are they going to get the Great Khali to give up his Rumble spot? Well, they promised he could make out with Tiffany.
Yes.
Tiffany was not privy to this. She did not like this idea.
Mm-hmm.
We then got somehow pants on the ground and who let the dogs out references.
Yes.
This was so atrocious. I cannot even put into words.
This was
like how embarrassing this was to watch. Like, it's one of those things that, like, if... I try to be a little more mild-mannered in my older age now than I used to be, perhaps, on older wrestling
this
shows.
This is all relatively speaking, by the way.
But if anyone thought this shit was cool, they should just be beaten half to death.
Well,
this is so embarrassing. Like, yeah, I know it's just a throwaway segment, but it's one of those things that if someone who doesn't normally watch the show sees this, they're going to be like, I don't ever want to watch this again.
It deserves to be as infamous as the Shockmaster incident. I will agree with you on that. It's not bad.
The whole point of the segment, Lost, is, you know, to them it's just, oh, let's make people laugh, and no one laughed, was The Miz was, believe it or not, the highlight of this whole thing. Irony here, considering what we just heard on Raw last week from Miz. He comes in and tells everyone, 5 years from now, everyone will be talking about him, and no one will remember any of you. Now, maybe no one is talking about any of those other people 5 years later, Tiffany especially.
Yeah.
But The Miz was just told on Raw 5 years later, yeah, no one remembers what you did 5 years ago, Miz. I found that funny. And anyway, because he interrupted the hilarity, and this was kind of the start of Miz's big push, obviously,
right.
You know, 2010, and then into 2011 was his career apex without... He won the title. He was the U.S. champion here. Well, Teddy Long gets angry at him and orders an immediate U.S. title match against MVP. And that's fine. I'm not a huge impromptu match guy on a pay-per-view. In this instance, though, the psychology of how they did this was so awful. And I get that Miz was the guy they were pushing,
right.
But it made MVP, who was the babyface,
yeah.
look like such a goof.
Yeah, and it was reminiscent of Teddy Long that, again, you'll see this on Smark message boards to this day, referring to the format of the play-a-play-a tag team match, you know, where he'll interrupt the opening segment and he'll make a tag team match on the spot for the main event on SmackDown, that he used to do that all the time. By the way, was it a rib on JTG by this point in time that he had a name that when you start saying it makes you think JTTS? It had to be, right? Because that's what he was.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I didn't get that, though.
Okay.
That's pretty good thinking by you.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I like that. That never dawned on me.
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing I think of when I think of that guy, because of his career arc, basically.
All right. Miz MVP. Want to talk about this and why I hated the psychology?
Yeah.
Well, you have no choice, because I'm going to talk about it whether you want
ahead,
to or
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
All right. So Miz, after being ordered into this impromptu match as the heel, goes over clean with an inside cradle.
Right.
Again, I get they're pushing Miz. I just did not like the way they did this, because it made MVP, again, look like such a goof. When you have a heel put into an impromptu match,
mm-hmm.
he should not be going over clean, because it makes it like he outsmarts the authority figure. He outsmarts the face, and that's just wrong psychology.
Well, here's the thing, too, and that there had already been, by this point in time, significant bastardization of the MVP character, and it was clear, because if you remember, him leaving the company was a while in coming. They had soured on him, the bloom was off his rose.
What's
they
funny
viewed
is
him as
he
somebody,
had actually improved as the company would lose faith in him.
That we refer to this in the Smark business as the Chris Masters effect.
Okay, yes. There were a lot of guys like that started in 06.
Yeah.
And because I remember doing SNS at the time, I was like, oh, God, this guy's not ready.
Yeah.
And then they'd give up on him.
Yeah.
And as the pressure was off, they would get better.
Right.
But at the same time, the company cared about him less.
But the psychology was weird. And also, too, you talk about the brand split not meaning anything anymore, is that Miz was on Raw. And he was ordered to wrestle by the SmackDown GM, who just happened to be standing there, and presumably that's what carried weight. Because I think Miz even made reference to, you can't tell me what to do, and it turns out that Teddy Long somehow could.
That's a good point.
Brand split.
That's a good point. And here's the thing, too. This match really had no heat except for, surprise, surprise, MVP getting a few near falls.
Yeah.
But after he loses, he gets his heat back
yeah.
by doing the playmaker, and the crowd boos because he was made, and that underlies my point about the psychology, the bad psychology, in that he was basically just made to look like a loser. Here he is getting an impromptu title match. He blows it by losing clean, and then he kind of just does a heel move by attacking the guy.
He was rarely, if ever, presented to his zenith as far as his abilities in terms of the booking, because in the
and
early
then
days,
Waller starts putting over how it was uncalled for MVP to do it. Like Lawler calls it. Lawler, you know, was
right.
not even paying attention to half the guys on the roster
pretty
at this
much,
point.
Yeah.
Like, calls it like it was a heel move. The psychology was just terrible. The match itself is not awful.
Right.
You know, because again, Miz was kind of coming into his own here.
Sure.
MVP was better than he was when he came into
sure.
the company
these guys
in late 06.
Both give you good matches.
But
yeah.
the psychology was so bad. Like, when you talk about the psychology of an impromptu match, and again, I know it was a much different era, and maybe this is unfair to compare it to, but the proper way to do an impromptu match is Warrior Honky Tonk Man at the first SummerSlam.
Right.
That's how you get over an impromptu situation. Now, granted, you had the Intercontinental title mean something in those days, far more than the U.S. title did here.
That's right.
Honky had held it for over a year. You had a huge star run out. But still, you know, the heel should not be outsmarting people in these situations.
Yeah.
That's just not the way it's done.
Yeah. Again, and it ended up being a mediocre match, like you said. It really didn't
I mean,
do
it wasn't good. It wasn't bad. And it was just odd that they added it, because it felt like some of the other matches could have used some time, the two world title matches.
Well, and here's the thing, too. And I agree with you on the psychology, because what it should have been, if it was going to be MVP, rather, slips on a banana peel, Miz wins, you don't have MVP get his heat back afterwards. You have Miz slip out of the ring, hold up the belt in the aisle as he's gloating, walking to the back. That's how you do it if you're trying to put heat on your champion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I completely agree. Yeah. Announcing was even worse.
Right.
Than in the first match here.
Right.
I mean, one guy would say something and the other two guys would just bury it.
Well, yeah. It was really bad.
Cole Lawler Stryker, worst three-man booth ever?
Wasn't there a Rod Trongard, Billy Graham, Lord Alfred Hayes one sneaking around in the 80s somewhere?
Okay. Okay, yes. Yeah, so oh, I could top it.
What?
Bruce Pritchard, Mike McGurk, and who was the third? They did a Houston house show from like 88. It was so awful. Who was the third person?
Was this Bruce Pritchard as Brother Love? Please
no.
Tell me. Oh, okay.
Oh, it was the Duke of Dorchester. Pete Doherty. Who the hell greenlighted that team?
As far as the most underachieving one of all time, I would say Tony Dusty Bobby. But whose side is he on?
What are you talking about? As far as major pay-per-views go, I think this is the worst three-man team ever.
It could very well be.
Talk about bad psychology. Next interview.
The
Jericho
show one?
Yes. Yeah. This could have led to something in the Rumble,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't. So I made a note of this, and then when Jericho, by the time Jericho comes out of the Rumble, we'll get to this later, there was no chance for this to develop. Why did they even do this? So for those who have forgotten, Jericho and Show were a pretty good tag team in 2009.
Yeah.
It started out as Jericho and Edge. Edge gets hurt.
Right.
More on that later.
Mm-hmm.
And Jericho takes on Big Show as his partner. They were a really solid because they had unified the tag titles at this point.
Right.
And they were pretty good as the tag champs. I thought that was a pretty good act. Well, they had broken up, and at this point, Show was teaming up with Miz. And Jericho came out and was, very upset that the Big Show was teaming up with Miz. When I say came out, this was all backstage. But, and he was whining, oh, we should be a team together. We need to look out for ourselves. And, Jericho's like, oh, if it comes down to you, me, and Miz, I hope you'll make the right call. And Big Show's like, yeah, I'll throw out you both, which was kind of a good line.
Mm-hmm.
R-Truth got involved, then walks up out of nowhere and starts promising to throw people out, which was weird because him and Jericho didn't have a spot. Because it was just R-Truth and Jericho. Big Show just leaves, and then R-Truth comes up to Jericho and threatens to throw him out. I don't remember them having a segment at all, the Rumble. This was just another waste. Wanted to point out, though, mm-hmm. want to have a good discussion?
Sure.
This
was just misdirection, I think. They thought they were clever with misdirection.
Well, they weren't. I don't like misdirection.
I don't either.
You should build the something.
That's right. Make everything mean something.
Let's have a good discussion.
It's Russo-esque to do misdirection.
Jericho and Show were...
go ahead.
Sorry there. My God, I thought I almost... Did I elbow one of your children? Yes, I'm sorry. Almost knocked one of these hockey trophies off, and you just freaked out in a way that I've never seen before here.
Wordlessly, though. Wordlessly.
Yes. Well, I'll break kayfabe.
Yeah.
It was teetering there.
Yeah.
Incoming!